It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show. We are through the first weekend of Astros baseball and a mixed bag, right? And your perspective changes depending on when the wins come. You lose your first two and then you win your next two and you feel pretty good about how the weekend wrapped up against the Angels. All you had to do was flip that. We feel a little bit differently. And going into the season, the question was about the bats, and the bats did everything they could to, at least early on, the first two games, to verify and maybe certainly justify your complaints or your concerns. And then the bats woke up over the weekend. The pitching never really got going. As far as your starters are concerned, Mike Burrows, I believe, was the one pitcher to get into the sixth inning from your starters. He didn't have a great outing in 5 2/3. Like, the debutantes for the Astros, not great, really. Imai, he got his first start yesterday, his first batter. He walked someone, then got Trout on an ABS challenge. Well, Trout challenged it. It was ruled a strike. He struck out four in his first two innings, and then things kind of got a little shaky after that. So you win 9-7 thanks to Paredes and the rest of your bats. It's a nice bounce back because it was ugly to start. We talked a little bit about it on Friday, how they got off to the rough start in Hunter Brown's first start of the season. That continued on Friday. We talked about the Thursday game, then Friday night happened, but the bats saved that series. You got to give credit to Christian Walker, Loperfido, and Yordan for coming through. Those are your best three bats this weekend. And we got Lance McCullers going tonight. Boston in town, Lance McCullers gets his first start. It would be a departure if he could, not just for him, but for the starting rotation, if he can go out there and give you maybe five or six, which may be asking too much of Lance McCullers in his first start this year. But you win 9-7, blue ball after a rough outing in his first appearance on Thursday, held it down, got the win. So you get out of that Angel series, you'll take it. You'll take what you got from Christian Walker, whether it's a kind of a harbinger of things to come. We'll see. But he was better. Jeff Blum talked about him on Thursday when he joined the show. He was a guy who he expected to bounce back, and he was hitting the ball hard, even if the numbers weren't great in spring. And in part of that conversation, Jeff Blum talked about how where the Astros are playing, well, where they were playing in the spring is a ballpark that doesn't really help the offense, while Daikin Park does. And he didn't seem correct Thursday and Friday, but maybe Jeff Blum knows a thing about baseball, because the bats were alive yesterday and the night before. 11 runs on Saturday and 9 on Sunday. That'll get it done. You needed it, because you gave up 9 if you weren't able to watch. They gave up 9 on Saturday and 7 on Sunday, and a couple back-and-forth games, while the first two games were just Angels whitewashes of the Astros, or So you get it. You get what you needed to after losing the first two. You split. And I am interested to see what Lance McCullers has tonight. While he currently is the fifth guy in the rotation, we know that's no guarantee. And how many starts will the Astros give Lance McCullers before, if he proves to not be up to the task, before they turn in a different direction? You feel like, beyond Hunter Brown, Burroughs, Imai, and that's it, are solidly in place, because Christian Javier wasn't great, to be kind, in his start. So it feels like the guys who've been here the longest outside of Hunter Brown are the guys most likely to fall out of this rotation if they pitch poorly. You're invested in Imai. You made the trade for Burroughs, so he'll get, or they will get their chances. But it's a big first month for Javier and McCullers. And so far, Javier, I won't say in danger, but you need better from him. And he needs better from himself if he's going to be a mainstay in the rotation going forward. I did enjoy Mike Trout challenging and being wrong, because that's going to be part of the story of baseball this year. Guys who believe they have a good eye, thinking a call was wrong, and either being justified in their complaints or costing themselves early in their team early in ball games. And Mike Trout was like, nope, not a strike. And ABS was like, in fact, it is a strike. Go sit your ass down. And now you've hurt your team as far as challenges are going forward. He's not the Reds. And he didn't have Buckner as his umpire, because the Reds knew C.B. Buckner was wrong. And they were justified. I think they went six for their first six in challenges. I think they wound up six out of eight. Or Buckner was challenged eight times, and six times the opponent was right. Six out of he lost his first six out of six, and that's how you pin it. The umpire lost, because the umpire makes a decision.
Yeah,
he that's got a ball over. Or strike, and then he has to announce to the viewing audience in the building and at home, this guy says I'm wrong. He doesn't say it like that, but that's pretty much what's going on. This guy tapped his head, said I'm wrong, and let's see if I'm wrong or not. And for Buckner, the first six said you're wrong, they're right. I'm waiting for the what's his name? What's the NBA ref's name?
Billy Kennedy.
I'm waiting for the Billy Kennedy of MLB umpires when they are front and center and the camera's on them and they have to make the announcement. They add a little extra,
a little sauce to it.
Particularly if they're right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. The call is upheld.
Yeah.
The way that Billy Kennedy does.
The call is. They probably have a script they have to stick to.
Yeah.
But I would like, huh, would you look at that?
You start it with, turn on the mic, huh.
Well, would you look at that? The call is upheld. You want drama too? But there's no drama, because we know.
Yeah, they do the
graphic.
Know,
so that thing, everyone gets excited. But I would love for an ump to show his personality, or her, if they have one, and just go, huh.
Or it's like, the opposite of C.B. Buckner, where it's like he's been challenged all day and just upheld every single one of them. And it's like, oh, another one upheld.
This guy's, you want to try me again, huh?
Yeah.
So far, I've been perfect.
That's actually, this is funny, and I'm glad that we got it in the first, 4 days of the season, that we got this ump was a bumbling idiot for 2 hours.
Yeah.
I would also like to get all these guys are wrong. I know my zone.
Yeah, I know ball.
I need the ump to get a win every once in a while, just for it to mean more when they get shoved in a locker.
Yeah, because for years we've had accounts tracking umpires.
Yeah, the scorecard.
Yeah, and if they've missed or were wrong. I need an umpire to be perfect.
Oh, man. And
to be challenged. But you won't get as many if he's always right. You won't get to a level where he's doing six out of six, because there's a certain number of times you can be challenged. But I want a perfect scorecard for an umpire. Yeah. And for them to take note of it. Oh, you want to try me again, huh? Because the last guys who tried weren't great. Now it's your turn.
It's a bad night for you guys. I also just realized this is different than other challenges, challenges in other sports. Because we see Ime Udoka's challenge record, or whatever, the ratio of correct, incorrect. We see that with football coaches. This, not only do we get to see, the Astros, whatever, percentage of appeals. You get to see the ump's percentage of CB Buckner 0-for-6.
And it's specific to an umpire.
Yeah,
because it's like, in basketball, it's three guys out there who could have missed the call or gotten it right.
Yeah, we don't assign it to one guy. Yeah,
for this, and Buckner caught it, he's the star of the weekend as far as that. And the numbers are out from Codify Baseball for the first weekend or so of ABS challenges. The batter's the worst at it. Actually, pitchers are the worst at it. They only did it five times. Pitchers only challenged five times. 40%, 2 out of 5. Batters challenged 78 times, 33 out of 78. So that's 42%, 33%, 33 right, 42%. Catchers were the best at it. They challenged the most, 92 times, got it right 59 times, so 64%. So the catchers were best at challenges.
It's a small sample, like in the grand scheme of things, like there's going to be, whatever, six more months of baseball. That feels like if you were to ask me who would be the best at it and who would be the worst, I think I would put it in that order of, like, catcher's probably the best, pitcher's the worst. Knowing how psycho pitchers
are. And pitchers less likely of them all to make challenges, period.
Yeah, but when they do, they're emotional and they're wrong.
Yeah, they're pissed off and they're wrong. Yeah, yeah. They're going to be the ones who – there's a clip going around because of what Buckner was up to. Max Scherzer, he wasn't pitching. He was in the dugout. He was with the Blue Jays last year. And he was, depending on what Buckner did, just flipping a coin. Like, he was miming flipping a coin. Oh, that's a strike. It was a strike by Buckner. So he flips a coin, lands on his shoulder, or I mean on his hand. Oh, strike. And they do the strike signal. And then other times when Buckner would call a ball, he would just flip the coin again and go, that's a ball, because Buckner's not seeing it. And he just, now he was right if you just go by what the box showed you in game. But Scherzer was having his fun with Buckner by simply saying it's a flip of the coin.
You got to stunt on him when you can.
Yeah, I mean, from the dugout, when nothing happens to you.
Yeah, what are you going to do, toss me?
Yeah, okay, sure. I'm not pitching tonight anyway. Who cares?
Oh, that's what we need. We need an emotional tossing. I don't know why someone would get upset, but you know.
Well, we have that, in fact. It was challenging, not ABS, but how quickly or lack of quickness to the challenge. In fact, we can do that right now. It was the first ejection for ABS that happened. Now, Cora was ejected for a check swing. So we'll just have our standard manager ejections. But Toronto's manager, I believe his name is Derek Shelton. I always want to say Blake, but that's somebody completely different. That's a musical country star. Derek Shelton, first guy ejected for an incident over ABS. And as I laid it out, it wasn't because of him disagreeing with the robots. As you'll hear the announcer mention.
That's what I want.
saying the robots are wrong.
I want to argue the Hawkeye technology.
Here is the incident. It was Twins versus, let me get the team. I forgot who they're playing. Either way, it was Derek Shelton, the manager for the Twins, ejected because he simply didn't like the logistics of the ABS challenge. A flip of the coin.
You got to stomp.
From the dugout. Slider.
When you got to pull down. I had the SNL player running, so that's people are hearing two different things. I was trying to grab audio for the previous show, so that's why you heard dual audio. Let's go again. Derek Shelton getting thrown out of the game.
And Helsley drops in a slider that is called ball four. I don't think Adley Rutschman.
I think he
did challenge.
The pitcher is challenging.
Oh, the pitcher is challenging.
Yeah, he put him right to his hat.
Ryan Helsley with the first pitcher challenge. And go! The first challenge by an Orioles pitcher, and Derek Shelton is incensed. He didn't think Helsley got that off in time.
Well, he went right to his hat. Came off the mound and tapped his hat.
Laz Diaz is yelling at Derek Shelton to get back. And the runner, Keyshaw, will be sent back to first. And Derek Shelton's been thrown out. He's arguing with the robots. You can't defeat the robots.
I think he's arguing that
tell to John
Connor,
sir.
Took too much time
to
challenge it. That's what he's arguing.
But just think, you throw a pitch you think's a strike. You kind of walk off the mound waiting for Adley, and he dropped the ball a little bit.
I thought Adley, when he dropped the ball, turned to the umpire and verbally, because you can verbally challenge,
exactly,
too.
We can thank the Orioles broadcast for that, their TV broadcast. But, yeah, it's our first ABS ejection. Hopefully many to come. But to your point, I do hope a manager is so incensed, or a player is so incensed, that maybe strictly out of embarrassment for challenging and being wrong, they yell about the robots being wrong.
Just purely emotional.
Yeah, and they just lose it because, yeah, all evidence suggests you're wrong on your call, but you can't take that. So you got to go off. Go off, King, and see how it goes.
Yeah. Or when a guy or a team runs out of challenges.
It's like when a soccer player yells at the ref. The ref's like, VAR is what's calling this. It's not me. I went to the screen and it says you're offside. We need that type of energy. Because soccer players will still get upset, even though the referee's telling you, hey, it's not me. You know, mm-hmm. I make the signal like a box. I did the review. And the review, the computer said you're offside. That's not me.
Yeah, and ABS has the similar thing with VAR, with the like very letter of the law cases of like, really, we're calling this a strike, it's like, really, we're calling this offside.
A fingertip can be offside, or shoulder can be offside. Has nothing to do with the play, and it's offside. The goal comes back. We're gonna get those type of scenarios in baseball as well. And the crowd, you know, ABS is working. The excitement from this crowd when a call went their way. Look, baseball's doing some good things, man. You can't. Yeah. I didn't anticipate the crowd's reactions. I appreciate some of the drama trying to figure out what's a strike and what isn't, and having an umpire be flat out wrong or right depending on the challenge. But the crowd's enjoyment of it, it's another win for Manfred.
Yeah. There's an element of like Commodus in the gladiator pits of like the crowd waiting for the thing to turn around the strike zone to see, and then thumbs up, thumbs down of whether this is a strike or a ball.
The energy in the playoffs.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
Everyone's worried about like, well, what if a final pitch is decided like we don't review final shots.
Yeah,
and
what are we talking
final
about?
Plays
welcome,
other
welcome to other sports, baseball. We've been doing this for years.
Completely overlooked the idea of a pitcher getting out of a jam with ABS assisted tapping of the head, and we're on to the bottom of the seventh.
Yeah, and in a scenario where Brian Abreu remembers how to pitch, and if we go to the playoffs and it's 3-2 and he throws a fastball, he dots it inside corner and it's called a ball, and he taps his head or the catcher taps his head, and we're waiting, and instead of walking in a run to tie the game, it's actually he's out and we go to the ninth or whatever. What are we talking about? Of course that'll be great. What are we saying?
Be the best.
It'll be great. The energy from the crowd initially feeling like you're wrong, and then your guy saying, no, I'm right, and it turns out he's right. Yeah.
And it takes what? It takes 15 seconds.
Yeah. Come on.
Just created instant drama like that.
And if you're wondering why Brian Abreu caught it, just look at his numbers.
Yeah,
over the weekend he wasn't good. Along with a lot of other Astro pitchers.
Yeah, we could have said the same thing for basically everyone else, except for Hunter Brown. They all had a moment.
Blue Ball responded, but he had his moment in game one. But for the most part, if you were an Astro pitcher, you pitch more than one game, you were given something up over the weekend. But they take the final two. Now they got Boston tonight. We'll go to break with that. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776. Sean, I want you to think about this when we come back. Is sports the only place where two men go head-to-head? Like, literally make contact with head-to-head. Think about it. Whether you want to call wrestling a sport, but think of all the things that go on in life. When outside of sports are two guys going head-to-head? And I'll talk about that in the context of a regional final when we come back.
97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
I was very disappointed in my timeline yesterday because I had to go searching for the Duke White Lotus meme. It didn't just pop up on my algorithm. Maybe I'm just not following the right people or looking up the right things. if you don't know what it is, it's from season 3 of White Lotus. The main family in that season, their dad went to Duke, and he wears a Duke shirt where he's contemplating suicide, and he holds the gun up to his head, and that became a thing. Duke better not blow a tournament game, or we're gonna. And yes, that was a thing because Duke blew a 19-point lead. But White Lotus season, that season came out before last year. So it popped up Duke.
We got to Houston. Use it for the Houston game.
Yeah, we certainly got to use it for the Houston game, maybe because it had already been used. It didn't just pop up. People were putting it out there because when you have a 19-point lead, you expect to make the Final Four. That did not happen. Duke blows it. And they blow it in a way that was entirely avoidable, beyond the fact that you have a giant lead. Simply hold on to the basketball. You don't have to make a pass. Eventually, I guess you have a fear of UConn tying you up. But the other Boozer brother, who someone awfully said, what Cam should have ate Caden in utero. Ugly, ugly stuff.
Come on.
Ugly stuff.
Come on. It was a bad turnover.
I mean, what are we talking about? Yeah. Now, Caden did say he puts a lot of blame on himself for costing his team and his brother specifically.
I mean,
he did turn the ball over when he didn't have to. As a point guard, just hold on to the basketball. In fact, Sean, this show loves some Schadenfreude, and I love to hear a Duke affiliate complain, whether it be someone who was a fan of the team or simply is calling the game. So let's hear from... Let's hear the Duke radio call of the final moments as Connecticut beats Duke 73-72 to go to the Final Four.
Get it in. They do for Boozer. Bobbled it. Back for Sarr. Needs to get rid of it. Does for Caden. 7 seconds. Try to throw it ahead. Deflected. Stolen by Connecticut. 2 seconds. It's Mullins up top for the win. Oh, he hit it. With 0.3 seconds to go. Malachi Smith ran off the bench. That should be a technical. But with 0.3 seconds to go, Connecticut has the lead, 73-72. As Connecticut got the three from Mullins after the turnover from Caden Boozer.
So you heard despair and then a moment of, wait a minute, can we pull this out? And then you realize no technical was going to be assessed. So you heard the desperation and in him, I believe he is named David Shoemate. He is the play-by-play man for Duke basketball. And I get it. That's depressing. When you feel like you're on the way to the Final Four, it's taken from you because of a mistake, and you think you have a way out. And the referee said, no, we're going to be consistent. We don't call that anymore. We just make sure, as long as there's not an incident, we don't call it technical. And the player in question ran back on to the bench, so he was fine. To pull the name out, Malachi Smith, to know the kid's name.
I know. A kid
who doesn't really play.
Yeah, cop move.
And you were able to know his name and say, and point him out, use his whole government name to try to get a technical in your favor. Cop move.
Just, come on.
Like, I get it, it's your job to know all these guys, but in that moment, like, most people would have been like, a UConn player's run on the court, but to call out Malachi Smith by name?
I want to imagine he's also wearing a warm-up, so he doesn't even see the jersey number.
No, he's got a shirt on over it, so he doesn't see the jersey. He just knows him by his face, I guess, and goes, hey Malachi's on the court! Get him! Roger Ayers said, no, I'm not going to get him. And Roger Ayers had a moment right afterwards with Dan Hurley.
Imagine if the Duke broadcasts all this.
Yeah, he headbutted him! So Roger Ayers, the only college basketball ref's name I know for whatever reason, I know it's him. Him and Dan Hurley came into contact. This is why I asked Sean, I guess everyone else, a question. In the moments as they're trying to figure out how much time is on the clock, Dan Hurley, jacket akimbo, he's got one shoulder off, like, I don't know, like he's being flirty. I don't know
what. Like he fist pumped his way out of a jacket.
Yeah, it's like he's wearing a shawl, and he's got one shoulder exposed for whatever reason. And he's like, hey, Dan, showing a little shoulder.
Yeah.
And he winds up, you know, strutting a little bit because he knows his team's about to make the Final Four. And he, like, just puts his head right on Ayers head and just I don't know that I've ever seen that before,
because it wasn't like pure anger. There's a little bit of like, I beat you too.
Yeah, like wait a minute. What did I do?
I'm taunting you, the ref.
Yeah, he has had a long-standing relationship with Roger Ayers. Roger Ayers has been a long-time college basketball ref, so I'm sure Dan Hurley and Roger have had their moments.
Yeah, I'm sure. But did Roger, every ref has did Roger, had a Dan Hurley
did Roger's Ayers come over like when they're down 19 and go, good luck? Did he talk trash?
Guess I won't be seeing you, Andy.
Yeah, if I get the Final Four assignment, one person who won't be there is you. I don't know that happened, but maybe Dan Hurley just blacked out. And he's like, yeah, Roger, what's up now? I don't know.
I assume that Dan Hurley is just
out of his mind all the time.
Just an insane person.
And this is why I asked the question. I don't know that anybody outside of sports ever has this happen. Maybe if you're drunk in a fight, maybe you go head-to-head. But other than that, that's the only time I could think of where you're going head-to-head with another person.
That it is like normally, I mean, sometimes it's people don't actually want to fight and they do this, but a lot of times it is like the 3 seconds before someone gets pushed and a punch gets thrown. That's like the only other time where two men go like forehead to forehead, do the like, I don't know what it is.
I'm sure it happened like, was it Star Trek or Star Wars as a greeting? Like it happens in like TV and movies, sci-fi, yeah, like an as alien, a greeting. Yeah, an alien yeah. greeting.
Oh, they, James Franco and Caesar do it at the end of Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, so it happens.
Before he says Caesar's home.
Yeah, it happens. Oh, nice pull. James Franco Franco almost hasn't been seen since, honestly. But I don't know that. I think it's in as far as real life, it's unique to sports and the pre-drunken brawl. It's like the butt slap. That's a sports thing. And if you do it outside of sports, people are wondering what the hell is wrong with you. If you do it outside of sports, you're clearly doing it for effect. No one's just slapping someone on the butt just to say, nice job. So I saw that and thought to myself, you know what? I was a fan of not giving Malachi Smith the technical thanks to that cop who calls the games for Duke. But if Dan Hurley caught one and it led to Duke winning, that's the only problem with it. It would have led to Duke winning. But if any other team got to the Final Four because Dan Hurley couldn't control himself and Roger Ayers was like, okay, that's enough. Enough out of you.
Are you kidding me?
I'm going to – look, some things you can get away with when you're excited because you're about to win, but that, no chance. I'm teeing you up.
Roger Ayers has more to answer for not teeing him up than in the alternate universe where he tees
where
him
he
up.
Does.
And we go, come on, you can't do that in that situation.
No, you
see
can.
The replay, you're like, you can definitely do that in any situation.
That could be justified, and everyone's like, Dan Hurley's a nut job.
Yeah.
And it's partly because of who's doing it. The offender, because it's Dan Hurley, everyone's like, you know what? Yeah.
There's some Draymond Green, like, this is on purpose because it's Draymond Green.
Like, if it's someone else, if it's Ben McCollum, who's kind of a nut himself, but he doesn't have the reputation of Dan Hurley.
John Shire did it.
Yeah, I mean,
if John
people
would
be fine because it's Duke. I mean, sure, cost them a game, but
I'd be like, that's so out of character. I am now worried.
Like if Kelvin Sampson did it, they're like, Roger Ayers, please let it go. Let the man. He's just excited. Look at what just happened.
It really goes to show how insane that Dan Hurley is. That he does this, and my reaction is just like, wow, that's kind of wild that he actually did that. Me picturing different head coaches doing
just it. Think of Sean Miller, who's got a personality himself. Just going head to head with the referee after a game winner.
Because like that would be Sean Miller at like a 10 of anger.
Dan but this Hurley's isn't like even anger.
Six. Yeah, it's just like a celebratory.
He's just stalking the sideline, excited because he's about to make another Final Four. And he's like, yeah, what up? That's all that is. It's not like, anger. It's like, we got another one, Roger. Yeah. What's up?
Like Kelvin Sampson doing it is just like, I almost can't like compute.
Every other coach you can think of is actually doing it because they feel they've been wrong. He's doing it because we win. I'm better than everyone. Let's go.
He's talking trash.
Yeah, that's what this is. Another win for Dan Hurley. And as you can tell by the discussion with Dan Hurley and UConn, it's the one team for me that makes the Duke loss, not even just a loss, the capitulation, the blown 19-point lead, a little less satisfying because it's happening in favor of UConn, who, along with their coach, has one of the more insufferable fan bases in all of college sports. And it's brought on by the fact that this is all, if you're talking about the history of college basketball, relatively recent. They won their first title in 99 beating Duke with the Rip Hamilton, Khalid Al-Amin team when they beat that Duke team in an upset. And since that point, they've just been on a run. There's been dips because Calhoun got old and the program needed a refresher. Kevin Ollie won a title, but he wasn't right for the job. And Dan Hurley now, of course, is. It's just they're like Ohio State level of dislike. You just go to any college basketball tweet over the last 18 hours just talking about UConn having a chance to make a Final Four and then eventually getting it done. It's like, yeah, Duke lost, but did it have to be UConn and their fans? Even Dan Hurley is getting shielded by the how much people don't like the fans. Like, yeah, Dan Hurley's nuts, but he's not worse than their fan base.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I've ever – I mean, I live in Texas.
Yeah,
Connecticut,
who's running
far
into
away.
UConn fans? But they were in town
yeah.
a couple years ago now.
Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it is because they are newer. They're the blue blood or, you know, the team that wins all the time in college basketball. I'm, like, most okay with. I'm, like, most, like – maybe it's because Dan Hurley's also an insane person. And the two titles I remember them winning are both, like, insane Kimball Walker, Shabazz Napier, like, carrying a team. Like, the example of can a great player carry a team, it's UConn twice. I kind of like – they did to Duke in, like, the funniest way possible. That game was over. They were down 19.
Yeah.
I think I saw something where, like, one seeds at halftime were, like, 140-0 in tournament games. And
with double-digit
15,
leads?
Up 15 at halftime.
Yeah.
And now one because Duke lost.
Duke has a recent run of losing games like this.
And that kid swished it, too.
Yeah, from the logo. He wasn't on the logo, but he was at the distance of the logo and made it. If you start to look at Duke, what they've done, in the Elite Eight, led by 19, loss. Final Four last year, led by 14, and loss. NC State the year before, led by 9 in the Elite Eight, and loss. And then round of 32 the year before, lost by 13, just got blown out by Tennessee. And then, of course, if you don't know, 2022 was Coach K's last year. They got beat by rival North Carolina in the Final Four, and that includes losing K's final game at Cameron Indoor to North Carolina.
Yeah.
So it's been where they're always in a conversation, but some critical, catastrophic losses for Duke, and this just adds to the mix as Dan Hurley and UConn make another Final Four. So you've got Michigan, who is the prohibitive favorite. You've got Illinois versus UConn. Illinois gets out of the South, taking care of the Cougs, and then the Hawkeyes. And then Arizona in the mix as well. Arizona, people think Arizona, Michigan. I've seen that as that's the national title game, while the other game is just, hey, nice that you won it, but you're not going to win it. You're not going to win the title. I mean, that's a little much.
I'm not doing that to UConn ever.
No.
I'm not doing that to,
not a chance.
Like, if UConn's still alive, they're still. I think Dan Hurley hasn't lost a tournament game at UConn. Like, past the Sweet 16. Like, if he gets past the Sweet 16, he's cutting down the nets.
Yeah, the two times he did it, they won the title back-to-back years and didn't win a game by less than double digits.
Yeah.
This run has gone a bit differently.
Duke, you really should have. You really should have beat him.
Yeah.
You really should have beat him.
19-point lead blown. Okay.
Do you think Arizona...
Just hold on to the basketball.
Arizona and Michigan are like... God, like, they're the only people not Duke fans that watch that game being like, we have to deal with this guy in the title.
Well, they have their own challenges, certainly have to get to the game, and Duke is supremely talented, but if we're talking about who I don't want to see the most, it's UConn. I don't want to see them.
I do not ever want to be on the opposite side of a basketball court as Dan Hurley. I don't want to ref a Dan Hurley game.
I'm trying to think UConn's history. Have they ever lost a title game?
I don't know.
So we talk about Dan Hurley past a certain point never losing. I don't think the program itself has lost a national title game.
If they did, like one, you know, like one in like the early parts of the run, right?
Yeah,
like the Okafor team.
That team won. Isn't that the team? Yeah, that team won.
Yeah.
We'll find that out. Keith will get to you when we come back. They have lost in the Final Four, but they have a perfect record in the title game. They're 5-0. Should have slayed the beast, Duke. Keith will get to you when we come back. Anyone else? 713-780-3776. 3776. But first, I want to talk about the good people at Monument Chevrolet, and not just the good people, the great cars. The good people get you into those cars, but if you want to find out all they have to offer before you head on out there, they're in Pasadena. That's my phone hitting the ground. They're in Pasadena off of Bellway 8 and 225. But if you want to find out what they have to offer, go to monumentchevrolet.com. We're at the very end of truck month, but the end doesn't mean it's over since it's still March. If you want to see all the vehicles they have and the deals on them, go to monumentchevrolet.com and find that Chevy Silverado 1500. I'm looking at all the deals for right now, and they're certainly featuring it because it's the featured vehicle in truck month. If that is something you're interested in, go take a look. Maybe there's something else you like. That's why that View Our Lineup option is right there for you. From the Silverados to the Colorados, maybe you're looking for an EV vehicle. It could be a Blazer, an Equinox. They're all there for you. Just click on View Our Lineup, find the vehicle you want, and make that choice. And take that deal and that vehicle choice out to Monument Chevrolet and meet the great people, including Jeff, who is their GM and point person. Any questions you may have, he'll have the answer for you, and then he'll get you with the salespeople and get you into a vehicle. And they like to go at your pace. It's your potential car. They're going to work with you to make sure not only the car fits what you're looking for, but the price does as well. That's why they've been in business for such a long time. It's been over 50 years for Monument Chevrolet because they treat people right. In Pasadena, off of Bellway 8 and 225, pick up a great car from great people. That's Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
So one correction, UConn is 6-0 in title games. Never lost, as some would say. 6-0. So they'll try to go to 7-0 if they can get through Illinois, which unfortunately is looked at as the undercard to Michigan and Arizona. Two number one seeds, we get it, but should be a good one with Illinois. We saw them up close and how good they are against UConn. Illinois, lots and lots of size. Let's go to Keith. He wants to talk some college basketball. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys. Awesome weekend for college basketball. I think most fans are okay with UConn winning these titles and Dan Hurley winning these titles over Duke. I think Duke is just up there with, like, you know, the Lakers, Cowboys, Alabama of the world, where, like, you know, that's kind of that upper-tier bandwagon of fans, that, like, fan bases that nobody likes. But I think most people are okay with UConn doing it because Hurley's backing it up and he is insane and it's ridiculous. But also, it's kind of funny how both Duke and Carolina blew 19-point leads in this tournament and lost. And also, you have to put in perspective, you know, Caravan for UConn is three Final Fours in 4 years. How many players, you know, all time can say that? But unbelievable game. You know, Duke choked again. And then I saw a take on Twitter that arguably a warm take that Shire has done less in his time at Duke than Hubert Davis has, and Hubert Davis doesn't have a job. So something to think about.
Shire's bottom, I guess, his floor, you would say, so far has been better than Hubert Davis. Yes, but Hubert Davis does at least have a title game appearance. He did that by going through Mike Krzyzewski, as we mentioned in Mike Krzyzewski's last game as a Duke coach. But, and that happened in Hubert Davis's first year. The problem for him is declining returns since. He made a Sweet 16 in 23-24 after not making the tournament in 22-23, but round of 64, round of 64. So while Hubert Davis does have the national runner-ups tag on his resume, that happened in year one. You could, whether you want to be, whether you want to really pick at him, you could say that happened with a team that really wasn't his, but he was the coach. And since that point, you have gotten worse and worse results for that Carolina team. While John Shire, sure, the losses are embarrassing and catastrophic as we went through, but his teams aren't suffering that type of fallout. he was actually at his worst as far as tournament results in year one, round 32, same year that, or the year before, or the year after, excuse me, let me get that right, the year after Hubert Davis took over. And since that point, Elite Eight, Final Four, Elite Eight, losing one game in conference the last two seasons, has an ACC title, tournament title on his resume as well. So I get what you're saying, but the trajectories of the two programs, in fact, he has three tournament titles. He's won three out of four. So the trajectory of the two programs, not even close.
Yeah, I mean, he's 124 and 24.
Well, going into yesterday, now he's got a 25th loss.
25?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Hubert Davis, in one more season, has lost 54 times.
Yeah. Like,
he's lost nearly 30 more times.
And has the same amount of wins.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get it. But arguably speaking, there's no argument.
Now, Hubert Davis, like, he does have the best, like, the best win.
He does have the best win.
Arguably most coaches that haven't won a title.
Yeah, to
Hubert
win
Davis
a
probably has the best
Final
win.
Four game, to beat your arch rival in that game, to
and
send
retire
off
him.
The other team's legend. All that plays into it, but that's now five seasons ago for UNC fans.
And UNC is one of those places where, like, if, like, NC State had done that, he's probably still dining out on that, and he's a, you know, if he was a former player, like, the 100% just, like, change the logo from UNC to NC State. Like, he's probably still chilling off of that.
Even off the disappointments of the tournament. He would be making the tournament every year and just has good teams, just isn't good enough.
UNC just has high standards, which rightfully so.
Right. They should.
Look at the banners.
Yeah. And much like Duke, their program that likes to hire their own guys. We'll see if that changes this time around. You see names like Tommy Lloyd mentioned, and others, Tommy Lloyd, longtime Gonzaga assistant, now leading Arizona into the Final Four, where they haven't been since, what was it, 01? Is that what I saw? Arizona hadn't been to the Final Four since?
Long time.
Yeah, so that is one of those teams or programs, I think, of Blue Bloods, but it's been a while for Arizona. West Coast basketball outside of Gonzaga hasn't been great. San Diego State made a run. UCLA has had a couple. But when's the last time a West Coast team won a title? Is it 95 UCLA?
Arizona or UCLA.
Oh, that Arizona team? It's been a long time for West Coast basketball. Gonzaga's been close.
There's the thing that always gets circulated, and it has been edited to include Baylor, but it was like no team west of this line,
yeah.
And they moved it just west of Waco after 2021.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something where basically like Kansas and Baylor, the westernmost title team since whatever 2000.
1997, Arizona won the title
with
the Miles Simon. What's the other guy's name? I forgot his name. The one that from that squad, they had a couple guys who didn't really become great pros, but clearly good, really good college players. 97, last time I believe a West Coast team won a title. So can Arizona finally get one? They got to go through the team who's a favorite to win it all, Michigan, who just taking teams apart. They took Tennessee apart.
Yeah.
There was a non-fight that resulted in one of the Michigan players pointing to the Tennessee player. They're up like 30 at the time. In fact, I think officially it was 29, but he used his hands to go 3-0 because it's just easier to do that than go 29. So it's tough when you are really backing up a teammate, which is what the Tennessee player was doing in this little hell ball scrum that started. And then you look to your right while you're talking trash, and the guy just points to the scoreboard and goes, "You're down by 30, buddy. We're about to go to the Final Four." It's not a lot you can say unless you want to talk about his mom. And because no basketball thing you can say is going to help. Yeah. You got to get real egregious at that point if you want to hit home. You got to say something awful. I don't know that was said as Michigan rolls on to the Final Four. And it's tough when you've competed all year long and your season ends, and then because you're one of the rotation guys, you're probably sitting on the bench as this is ticking away, and you watch Michigan celebrating the coach's kid knock down a three. That is insult to injury. If I got to watch Dusty May's kid knock down a three, and it's also, if I'm Dusty May, I'm like, guys, you're excited a little too much. What am I? I get it. I'm the coach's kid. But am I, Do I amuse you?
Yeah.
Am I a clown? What? Why? I'm wide open. I should be able. He was wide open. I should be able to make this shot. I get it. It's cool and all, but guys throwing their towels up. And I saw one Michigan player so excited, he spun and threw his towel into the crowd just blindly. It's like, all right, guys.
I have made a shot before.
You're treating me. You're treating me like I'm special, not in a good way.
Yeah.
Cut it out. I would just let it be known. If I'm out there, act like I've done it before.
I even think that you can be a little bit excited.
Yeah, but you don't need to lose your mind.
You don't need to do all that.
As if I've never made a jumper before. Like, we see some of the moments where people are honoring people who, with these things. Like, I think Nebraska at one might have, like, had a kid at a spring game and they let him score a touchdown. We've seen this happen before. Don't treat me like that. Don't treat me like I haven't been able to shoot a basketball my entire life. You don't think my dad taught me how to shoot a jumper? He knew I wasn't going to be that athletic. I'm his size.
Yeah, he's probably, like, I mean, he almost definitely is, like, one of the top 30 basketball players in that building at that moment with 20,000 people in it. Like,
I don't know. Maybe the Fab Five was there. Who knows?
Yeah, I wanted to build in some, like, well, if Grant Hill was calling the game.
Yeah, got it. But if I'm Dusty May's kid, if I'm
Wally Zerbiak's, like, you know what? I think I could take Dusty May's
kid. If I'm Charlie May, I'm like, guys, chill. Be a little excited, but don't treat me like I can't ball. A little bit, at least. Just some things I would have noticed.
Yeah. Wow. It's a 12-man rosters. That's 24. I'm just putting him at 24th.
Yeah, he might be better than some of the Tennessee walk-ons.
Yeah, that is true. Didn't get to see them yesterday.
We should have. They're down by 30. Might as well play those kids if they didn't get in the game. So that is kind of a recap of the college basketball weekend. The Final Four set. Michigan the favorite to win it, but don't count out the Huskies because once they get there, they're a real threat to win it, particularly under Dan Hurley. That's hour one done. We'll get to hour two. We'll stick with basketball because the Rockets won a couple games over the weekend. It's less so about beating the Grizzlies and the Pelicans, but Tar Eason and Alperen Şengün did a sit-down together. You can't call a presser. They were just in their lockers. But they sat down together to talk about the state of the team and how much the team believes in Tar Eason. We'll get to that when we come back.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5.